Those of the sponsors and don't necessarily reflect those of this station or iHeartMedia.
This is the Family Center for Recovery show. Join us now to learn ways to begin the path to recovery. The Family Center for Recovery treats patients that most centers don't. Learn more at FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. You're probably wondering who this is. I'm Peter Nathan. I'm going to be hosting the show here for the Family Center for Recovery Hour. And what we're going to be going over is a lot of really cool stuff. And I hope you're enjoying your Sunday afternoon as you join us. And we want to welcome you and thank you for listening to us. Is that a lot of the things that are going on positive. We're going to talk about things that are really helping people, things as far as that might be on your mind and have some thoughts on. So hopefully we're able to touch on those. I'd like to thank a few people. I'd like to thank Dr. Moran for having the show and being able to have people on to talk about these things. I think that's one of the key things is having a voice. And joining us today is a good friend of mine, Justin Epstein. I met Justin a few months ago through the Palm Beach Substance Awareness Coalition. And what really caught me was his passion. He is very passionate, is very introspective, and his ideas. And with that, I'd like to welcome Justin on the show, and thank you for coming in.
Not a problem.
So, what I'd like to begin by is maybe Justin, if you could share with us and listeners a little bit about your background and tell us a little bit about yourself and your story, please.
All right. So, I'm 31 years old. I was born in Shirley, Long Island. I moved down here when I was about 6 months old, so I've been living here ever since. I had everything I ever wanted, anything I ever needed. My family provided it for me. My dad was an alcoholic. My mom was in and out of drinking and using and just a normal lifestyle. You know, I thought everything was normal in my household. I didn't know that there was something different. Cause pretty much everybody that I grew up with, all my friends, their family, their moms and dads did the same exact thing my mom and dad were doing. My dad comes from a biker background, so I was raised around Harley Davidsons, even from a baby. So those are kind of some of the people that I used to look up to. I used to idolize those people. They were covered in tattoos. They would drink all hours of the night. They were getting arrested. They were stabbing people and shooting people. And those are things that I idolized. So I had this dream for my future that didn't look too positive. Like, so me ending up in the situations that I put myself through growing up, like, it's not a surprise that I ended up in those places. My dad worked a lot of hours. He would wake up really early in the morning. He would leave for work before I was even up and getting ready for school. And then he wouldn't come home until I was pretty much winding down at the end of the night. He would spend most of his time at the bar when he wasn't at work, so I really didn't have much interaction with my father until I was a little bit older. And when I was a little bit older, we used to do normal father and son things. We would go fishing. He tried to teach me how to drive, just the normal stuff. I had a pretty normal childhood as far as on my end. I hung out with normal kids. I did the normal kid things, skateboarding, rollerblading, bicycles everywhere, way before they had cell phones. So I had a normal childhood. I went to a bunch of different schools because I was always getting into trouble. I had gotten kicked out of pretty much every school I had ever attended, and up until the point where I dropped out of school. I took ninth grade 3 different times. Now, when I was in high school, it was when my addiction first started. Mm-hmm. So, well, actually, it started in middle school, but it really progressed while I was in high school, and I was getting in trouble all the time. They actually gave my mom a perfect attendance report card because my mom was at the school every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, my mom loved me the best she could. My mom still loves me. She's my biggest fan. I love my mom to death. I'd do anything for her. Part of me growing up and being an addict was my mom and my dad enabled me. You know, whether they realized that they were enabling me or they didn't. You know, but I was also a really good manipulator, so I'd be like, hey, I need money to go hang out with my friends. We're going to the movies or whatnot, and then they would give me money, and I would go and I would spend it on whatever it was that I was using at the time. My mom and dad got a divorce when I was 16, I want to say. I don't remember exactly how old I was, but they separated and they ended up getting a divorce, and it was me and my mom from there on in, and we moved around a lot. We never really had a permanent home. I think I had a pretty normal childhood, you know. It just seemed like all the friends that I had acquired over that, over me being a kid, like, their families went through the same exact thing, you know. So I didn't have a different perspective on where the... I thought I was normal. I seen normalcy because I was hanging out with people that had the same things that were going on in my life that were going on in their life.
So, Debbie, if I'm following you correctly, I think high school and you're doing some things as far as drinking and things like that and hanging out and, you know, some things going on in school and then and high school. You get through high school, graduate high school?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I took
right.
ninth grade three times and then I ended up dropping out.
I see. And then from there, what, okay, so you drop out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then where did things kind of go from there? What kind of path did you head down?
I did a lot of jails. I did a lot of detoxes and treatment centers. I did a lot of mental institutions. I did some homelessness. Come to find out, I'm not really good at being homeless. I don't really know how to cope very well with being homeless. I like taking showers. I like eating on a regular basis. I know this now because now that I'm clean.
Yeah.
That's pretty a good segue. My clean date is April 17, 2010.
Excellent.
Yeah, so I've been clean a little over 7 years. I just recently celebrated a seven-year anniversary in recovery, which I pretty much hold that more important than my birthday because that was the day I started to live, I believe, and that's just my belief. So I ended up in all these different places. I had gotten arrested. If you look at my police report, I've been arrested, I think it was 14 times in Palm Beach County, once in North Carolina, and twice in Broward County. So I have a number of arrests over my adulthood. I couldn't say that I did anything properly. You know, I would get away with one thing, but then I would turn around and I would get arrested for something completely different. And everything always caught up to me. I did a lot of detoxes. I went to treatment 12 times, and on the 13th time, it stuck. This time when I decided to get clean, I didn't really do a normal treatment detox deal. I was completely homeless. I had nowhere to go. My mom didn't want anything to do with me. My dad didn't want anything to do with me. My mom actually moved and wouldn't tell me where she moved to. She didn't want me to come and steal everything from her like I had normally done in my past. And, I was dating this girl,
okay,
and she ended up passing away, and that kind of sent me on my final run. I used for another 6 months, and on April 16th, I used for the last time, and April 17th, I really wish that I knew why. There wasn't a specific reason, like there wasn't a series of unfortunate events that had happened and forced me to get clean. Like, I was just using, and something came over me, and I had the gift of desperation that I hear a lot of people talk about, and I didn't realize it was that until I've gotten into recovery and I've started to work on a program, and I realized it was a gift of desperation, and at that moment, I banged on my mom's door, and I told her I wanted to go to treatment, and no treatment center would take me. I didn't have insurance. I didn't have all these things that are requirements now. I didn't have any of those things, so I did the next best thing, and I went to the Salvation Army Center of Hope. That place saved and changed my life. There were some men there that showed me how to live. There were some men there that told me that the things that I was doing were not okay, that this is not how you're supposed to live your life. And it was kind of like the first time in my life that somebody was pointing to me that the things that I grew up doing and the things that I had done on a daily basis were not okay. So, like, that normalcy had disappeared, because now I have somebody telling me something different, and kind of what they were telling me I started to believe in. You know, I knew that I wanted to find some different way to live. Now, I hadn't tried to get clean once. I really wish that was my story. I did not. I can't tell you exactly how many times I had tried to get clean. I just know that I wasn't willing to try something different.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued on that same path, and it was a lot of unwanted misery that I put myself through. Would I change it for anything? I probably wouldn't, because it made me the person that I am sitting here today. And I'm pretty happy with the person I am today.
That's really cool. I think one of the things that our listeners and I, that really, as far as when you mentioned that point of desperation, and mm-hmm. Mother's Day today,
yeah.
Sunday, moms are so important.
Yeah.
They're there for us.
Yeah.
And if you could take us back maybe to that point, were you with somebody? Where were you? I mean, were you hanging out with a bunch of people in a bar? Or were you homeless at that point? Or were you in an apartment? Where were you when it all of a sudden just kind of hit you? And maybe if you could take us back to that moment, that would be, if that's okay, if you don't mind.
I don't mind. I try not to forget that day. It's
okay.
A very important
Excellent.
Day. So, like I said, my mom didn't want anything to do with me. But my mom also never stopped loving me.
Mm.
And I knew I could easily manipulate my mom. So anytime I was hungry, if I needed to take a shower, I needed a safe place to sleep, I could pretty much beg my mom, and she would let me. She would either give me the shower, she would let me stay, or she would feed me or whatever. So I'm assuming it was April 15th or 16th of mm-hmm. 2010, and I called my mom, and I told her that I need a safe place to sleep, I need a shower, and I'm hungry. So my mom had my old room, right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well,
excellent.
I mean, it sounds beautiful and everything. Like, when I think about that, I think about, like, in movies when I see people that keep their child's room, like, everything looks exactly the same. Mm-hmm. I wish that was what happened, but it wasn't. There was mm-hmm. literally nothing in the room except for a mattress on the floor. So, you know, I had gave my mom the spiel. I'm going to change. I'm going to do whatever I need to do, you know. And I didn't do anything different. I went in, and I was at my mom's house, and I started to use. So my last time using was spent in my old room with literally nothing in it. I had an ashtray next to the mattress, which was full of cigarette butts, and I had some dirty clothes in a Winn-Dixie bag in the other corner of the room. And something just came over me and said, you need to try something different.
Wow.
Yeah, I really wish there was an aha moment, but there really wasn't, and I'm not 100% sure why I decided on that day at that time to decide to try to do something different. I'm just glad that I did.
You know, I've heard this story as far as where it just kind of hits somebody, and somebody says, you know what, this isn't what I want.
Yeah.
It's just something has to change here, and I want to do something different. And I've heard it kind of explained to me that there's like two lives.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, I want to make a change. You can always go back to that other life.
Oh, yeah.
And if you don't like being clean and you don't like that, you want to do something,
mm-hmm.
go back to that life, it's there.
Oh, it's always there.
But what I find is that people who make that change and they start to, we're going to break here in a little bit,
pay
some bills,
yeah.
Pay some bills and stuff like that, Dr. Moran and everything like that. But what I'd like to do is revisit some of those things, like the mentoring, the people that you met at Salvation Army, because they sound very important.
At the Family Center for Recovery in Lantana, they treat little problems before they become big problems. Unfortunately, 98% of treatment centers won't treat teens because they think it's too difficult or not profitable enough. Whether your teen is struggling with behavior issues, substance abuse, or mental illness, they believe every kid deserves a chance. Contact Family Center for Recovery or go to FCFRMD.com. That's FCFRMD.com. Family Center for Recovery. Before little problems become big problems.
I'm Tiffany. I have some tips for you on how to quit smoking like I did. First, I did some reading about it. I found a lot of great advice on how to quit smoking and picked out the ways I thought would work best for me. I started by setting a quit date. Then I threw out my ashtrays, lighters, and matches. I did other things too, like exercising more, and it worked. But I'd still get cravings, especially on long car rides. To help me with that, I put a picture of my mother in my car. She died of lung cancer from smoking cigarettes when I was only 16. Now I have a 16-year-old daughter. That picture of my mother reminds me that I don't want to miss all the things my daughter is going to do in her life, including turning 17.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
Welcome back to the Family Center for Recovery radio show. If you wish to share this broadcast with a friend, you'll find the link at the Family Center for Recovery's website, fcfrmd.com. That's fcfrmd.com.
Well, welcome back, and thanks for joining us on your Sunday afternoon and Mother's Day. And we're here with Justin Epstein. He's joined us, and he's telling us his story. And what we're going to talk about a little bit more is Salvation Army and the mentors and people that are so important in Justin's life. And if you wouldn't mind sharing with us a little bit about some of the Salvation Army and what that's meant to you.
All right. So if you were previously joining in with us, you already know how I ended up and being at the Salvation Army. So I ended up at the Salvation Army on April 20th, 2010. They had a bed available for me. You know, it was people that were, I don't want to really put out his name because I didn't ask him permission, but his name's Gene Martin. And if anybody knows Gene, you know how much of an inspiration he is to me. He actually gave me my medallion a couple of days ago at my home group. So I slept in a room that had 52 men in it, right? So I've seen some of the treatment centers they have today, right? And you have two people in a room and people still complain. Like, I slept in a room with 52 other men. You know, it was a real big hassle to get up and move around in this room. They made us do things like the toy drive. They made us go out and ring the bell. They made us do these things that showed us some humility in our life. Mm-hmm. You know, that was one thing that I was lacking while I was using was humility. Like, and I always thought that because I held the sign, because I was homeless, because I begged people for money, like, I thought I had humility in my life. But what I wasn't humble about it. Mm-hmm. I had humility, but I wasn't humble about it. You know, so the Salvation Army had us out there ringing the bell and collecting money and doing those things. And it was like part of one of the first times somebody actually trusted me in my recovery. Mm. You know, like they actually trusted that I would ring this bell and they would put money in this bell and inside the bucket and I would bring the money back. So it was a real, it was big for me because somebody actually trusted in me, you know, when I didn't even trust in myself.
Mm. That's very heartwarming.
Yeah.
And you know, I guess the thing is that what you mentioned is as far as, 52 and beds and things like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot as far as treatment facility-wise. And I think people are listening. They're trying to figure out really from a treatment facility standpoint, you've mentioned, shared your background. What are some things that you might like to see done differently when it comes to treatment? What are your views and thoughts on that?
All right. Well, first off, I am not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I am nobody special. So some of the things that could be different for people to more benefit from treatment would be further education. Like family education, you take the addict away from the environment, you send them to treatment, they do their 30, 60, 90 days or whatever it is that they do while they're in treatment, they get out and they go home, they're going right back into the same environment. The change really needs to happen on both ends. It needs to happen with the addict that's in treatment and the family on the other end. Because if the clean addict gets out of treatment and goes home to a dirty environment, before you know it, that clean addict is no longer a clean addict. He's a dirty addict now. Mm-hmm. And we already know how those people, those things that they're capable of doing while they're using. Some other things would be more aftercare. Like alumni services and following up with those things, Facebook page dedicated to just alumni for certain treatment centers, more community events. like a clubhouse or something like that where recovering people can come and hang out. People that have the same ideas, you know, like-minded people in one area. They have like rallies and stuff like that, and all that stuff is good and dandy, but that only happens like once every month, and then you have a bunch of people, and most people, you don't even see those people anymore. We used to have a clubhouse over in West Palm off of Dixie Highway, which was really good while it was open. Mm-hmm. Like, they had video games and pool tables and ping pong tables and a snack bar, and a lot of people hung out there. And I don't remember the reason why it ended up closing down, but there's things like that that gave recovering addicts a safe place to go and hang out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to worry about going to hang out in a bar to play pool or go into a pool hall where they serve alcohol. And not to say that you should be afraid of the alcohol temptation, because like you have to live your life. You know, you can't just get clean and expect people to offer you drugs anymore. Or when you go into the gas station to get gas, like, they shouldn't have the cooler of beer right there by the checkout. Like, you need to learn how to live your life without using. That's the main thing. Like, the music that I listen to, like, you can't go to a big concert venue and listen to that kind of music. You have to go to bars to listen to the kind of music that I like to listen to. And what I do is I get a group of people that are in recovery, and we go there, and we have it set in mind that I'm going to hold you accountable, you're going to hold me accountable, and if for any reason we get separated, we don't have to worry about using or drinking or any of those things. Like, I have learned to live my life without using because of my recovery process.
You know, I think the thing that's so important that people is to understand is that, at least that I've grown to understand and appreciate, is things such as community. And you know, we like to be with people that do similar things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And family, really, you know, we think of our mom and our dad, siblings, brothers, such, but family really can kind of incorporate people that think like we do, as far as enjoy doing similar things, listening to the same music that we do, that we like to, hobbies, things like that.
Yeah.
And so they almost become like your brother or your sister, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you care a sharing bond. Music. Music I've always been a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're talking as far as like music that I like, and I kind of grew up listening to bands like Def Leppard, Scorpions, Cinderella, Rat, things like that.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite bands and groups that you like that you like?
All right. So number one band has to be Motionless in White. Second, Slipknot. Mm-hmm. Third, Memphis Mayfire. Amir. Siler. There's just a whole wide variety. The whole genre of metalcore is probably my favorite genre of metal. And then you have legendary bands, obviously, like Tool, Marilyn Manson, Of Mice and Men, and bands such as those. And if you've never heard any of those bands, you please take a listen to some of those bands, and just don't judge me on my taste in music. It's what I like.
Well, and you know, the thing about it is that, now this is going back in the day, I'm kind of dating myself, Ozzy Osbourne. My mom was listening to an Ozzy Osbourne song one day, and his octaves and his voice range, and you actually had like symphonic in the background. She goes, "Who is that?" I said, "Well, it's Ozzy Osbourne. He's kind of like a heavy metal." I mean, some of these, a lot of these artists are extremely gifted. And one I think of, drummer from Def Leppard.
Yeah. Inspiration right there.
Yeah. Are there certain artists that you aspire to of those bands that you hold in high regard as far as their talent and what they've done and who they are?
And I don't want to break anybody's anonymity, but the people that are in the music industry that are in recovery, you know, I hit a homeless pit of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
Those artists that are in the music industry, they don't hit that homeless bottom. They don't hit the money running out and them having to steal everything. They just hit that moment of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get that moment. You know, and the ones that are in the music industry that are in recovery are the ones that I hold of high regard. And I don't want to throw any names out there because I don't want to break anybody's anonymity.
Somebody that I know that's a very recognizable musician and is very outspoken about his recovery, and I think that's one of the things that Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper. He helped a lot of people. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think that what I like about Dr. Moran and the Family Center, what he's allowing us to do here is that a voice. And I think for so many years, it's been the stigma of recovery and substance abuse, mental health, is that we don't talk about it. And I think the more and more people realize and understand that it touches everybody in some form, every walk of life, I think the sooner that we as a society start to really kind of open up, talk about this. I think that there's a lot of pain in the world is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And this is a great way, as far as from healing and things like that. Other hobbies that you enjoy doing, aside from music would be?
I like hanging out with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
I like going to events such as like a Sunfest. I like a lot of things with nature.
Nature, excellent.
Yeah,
okay.
I like giving back, going out and picking up trash, going hanging out at the park, and enjoying the beauty of nature. You know, it was one thing that I never really paid attention to while I was homeless, you know, because I wasn't worried about the way that the sun rises and the birds on the trees and the color of the tree. I wasn't worried about those things when I was homeless and when I was in my active addiction. It wasn't until I got into recovery that I was able to actually see pure beauty and mm-hmm. things like that. I'm from South Florida, and I don't like the beach, so I really don't do too much of the beach thing. I went to the Full Moon Drum Circle the other night on Lake Worth Beach.
Oh, cool.
Which,
excellent.
Yeah, it allows you to get in touch with Mother Nature. Like, mm-hmm. you just the whole energy and the aura and everybody that's there, like, you can just feel the love.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the people that are there are in recovery or they're not. Like, I don't have to just hang out with people that are in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. You know, I can go over to anybody's house, even if they drink. It does not bother me. I am not going to live in a bubble because I am now in recovery. I try to live my life the best I can without me using. And just because I've stopped using doesn't mean I have to try to force you to stop using.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do that, that's fine. It does not affect my recovery. And I don't want to sound too, like, 12-step oriented. If you want to know more about my Facebook, or if you want to know more about my personal recovery, you can go on my Facebook page. It's Dopeless, Not Hopeless, and you'll be able to see a picture of what I look like. You can reach out to me if you want to. Like some of my videos, watch them, and I talk more in depth about my 12-step process.
Yeah, and I think that's a thing that I hear from a lot of people is the simple things in life that maybe we didn't notice before. You know, it's like watching the sunrise or set,
mm-hmm.
the peacefulness, the quietness of it, the birds chirping,
yeah.
A cool breeze, the simple